Hello, everybody. This is Max Cavalera, Soulfly, Return to Roots, and you are listening to Talk to Me. Stay metal. Oi!
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk to Me, episode 265. Multiple guests this week. We have Richard Wynn and David Silvera of Breaking in a Sequence. You also know David from Korn. So that was a lot of fun. It was from the live show from Tuesday night. So it's an unedited, full warts and all from the live stream the other night. And then at the back half of the episode, we have an interview with Brittany Slays of Unleash the Archers, who have a new album out on Napalm Records entitled Abyss. It will be out August 21st, so make sure you're sticking around for that. But first off, it was great to have Richard and David back on the show. If you remember, maybe last year, 2 years ago, we had them on when Bias came out, and now they are going by Breaking in a Sequence. Great new single out called Delusional. Make sure you're checking that out. And if you want to check out the live video, make sure you're subscribing to the Talk to Me YouTube page or heading over to the Talk to Me Facebook group and checking out the live video from the David Silvera, Richard Wynn live stream from Tuesday night. And then there's also a video of the Brittany Slays interview that will be up on the Facebook page. That will be up on the YouTube channel, trying to grow both of those. So make sure you're checking it out. If you're into seeing this live or seeing this on video, head over to those respective pages. So our good friend down in Atlanta, Georgia, Scott Bowling is back on to do some promo here on the Talk to Me podcast. So let's check out something from Scott Bowling.
My name is Scott Bowling. I have a show called Good Company. Good Company is a show where we film artists in the rock genre and we talk about their first record all the way to where they are now. We've interviewed bands like Korn and Seven Dust and Rich Ward. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook under Good Company or Good Company with Bowling. So please, if you get a chance, check it out.
Good Company!
All right, make sure to head over to Good Company with Bowling. Let him know that the Talk to Me podcast sent you. That will be great. And now it's time for Richard Wynn and David Silvera of Breaking in a Sequence. Let's check them out, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily. And it is Tuesday night, and we've got two great guests tonight. We've got David and Rich, both from Breaking in a Sequence. How are you guys doing tonight?
Very good. Thanks for having us on.
Good. Thanks for having us.
Look at that.
Bias.
Yeah, we'll get into that, man. But first off, we got to talk about David's fantastic American flag background. You were talking before we started recording where that came from, man. Give us a little backstory on that.
Yeah, came from I had a friend. Like 10 years ago, haven't talked to him for a long time. And he was an assistant to Congressman John Campbell. And he gave me this flag because the congressman had it flown over the Capitol for a couple of days. So I guess they take turns of the members of Congress flying flags and they give them out as kind of presents. So I thought since it was flown over the Capitol, it was kind of special. So I framed it and put it on my wall in my house here.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, man. What do you got? You got anything cool like that, Rich?
Nope. I'm in a blank office. I like to keep everything nice and white, so it drives me crazy.
Nice. Well, the last time I spoke to you guys were Bias, and now we're Breaking in a Sequence. So what's with the name change?
You want me to tackle that, David?
Sure.
So, I mean, last time it was Bias. And, you know, we rode with Bias for a long time, but a lot of people and a lot of fans kept coming to us saying, hey, we can't find you guys on, like,
yeah, that's a very hard name.
On, you know, like the digital platforms and everything. And we slowly started to realize that people couldn't find the Interpunked on their keyboards. You know, it's like a, you have to go into the alt keyboard to get to that dot.
Right.
And it really like screwed things up for us. So we sat down and thought about it long and hard. And during this whole rebrand of everyone rebranding, we're like, you know what, let's just pull the trigger. Let's go something a little bit more, you know, specific and original, you know? So we basically decided to, you know, extend out the bias and use it as an abbreviation, you know? So we're officially breaking in a sequence, AKA bias. You can call us bias, you know, so you don't have the same, so many syllables, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the new song Delusional out now, you can get it on all the platforms and everything else. Tell me a little bit about Delusional, David.
One of my favorite songs we've ever written. I can tell you that. It's a good heavy groove song. It's a great song. I don't even really know how to describe it. It's a really good song.
Yeah. Well, so one thing too, it's like you're one of the few drummers, and I don't even know if I said this last time I talked to you, but you're one of the few drummers that when you hear you play, you know it's you. And so it's definitely coming through on the breaking in a sequence stuff. So it's awesome to hear you playing. And when I go down the, you know, the YouTube rabbit hole of you guys' you know, videos and songs and live shows, everyone is just like, thank God David is back playing drums.
You know, fortunately, that's a really cool thing for you to say. I appreciate it. I've actually heard that quite a few times over the years, and I think it's a huge compliment. And to me, it just feels like I'm playing drums. You know, when I play, I don't think, I'm playing something of my own style. To me, it's just playing. But when everyone says that to me, it's just a really big compliment. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah. You know what started all of this, especially Delusional? When we first started playing, we were trying to, you know, like just be a rock band. You know, we wanted to have like lots of melody, you know, lots of melodic parts. And then we wrote Pity. And after we wrote Pity, like something changed, something clicked. It was like a little bit heavier than what we were doing at the time. And literally one day at practice, I look over at David and he is playing with his entire body again. I'm like, whoa, I think we're onto something. And we realized, hey, you know, we need to go a little bit heavier. And then when I walked into the studio and they had just the music, the instrumental for Delusional, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, this is David. This is David playing for real. This isn't, you know, all the other crap that we heard before.
Right. You know, it's funny listening to this stuff and obviously reading the comments. I mean, you guys have a feel of a certain band that David was once a part of, but it's one of those things is like, is it because of what you guys sound like, or is it David? And I think a lot of it kind of just, it's just, that's the way David plays. That's how he's going to play. When you hear him, you know, on a song, it's going to kind of remind you of Korn because it's David and that's David's sound.
Absolutely. You know, we'll demo songs, you know, just with like programmed drums, bring it in, and then David will start playing over it and it's a completely different song.
Yeah.
Just because he has a different ebb and flow, you know, to his playing. Yeah.
And if you guys are watching on YouTube, watching on Facebook, make sure and comment. We can pop those up. We got a couple of comments. Got Brandy Nelson saying hello to everybody. And Christopher Salvador saying hello to David. It's kind of cool. Hi, to Chris. Pop those up. People watching live. But yeah, man, it's just like, it's one of those things, David, you know, kind of going back just throughout your career, you know, kind of getting the, I was actually watching some old LAPD stuff that's on YouTube. That's a lot of fun to watch you guys, you know, super babies back then.
Yeah.
But you know, getting the band together back then, was it kind of a thing where you guys knew you were doing something different, or were you just playing what you felt?
You're talking about LAPD?
LAPD, yeah. Into Korn, you know, like just that whole era back then.
Yeah, when we made LAPD, I think we were listening to a lot of Faith No More, Introduce Yourself, and early Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I think those two bands had a big influence on us. But then LAPD, we put out a record. We got signed to XXX Records, but they didn't even want to put us on tour, nothing. So that was probably a waste of time. But it did lead us to the conclusion that we needed to get another singer and keep going. So after LAPD, we departed from the singer of that band, and we all moved down to Huntington Beach from Burbank. And then we started looking for a singer, and then that's when we found John playing in a bar in Bakersfield. And at that time, a little bit after that, is when we when Head joined the band. When he heard us with John singing, he thought, you know, these guys are really doing something different. But for some reason, between LAPD time and when we formed Korn, it seems like, especially for Reggie and James, it seems like a switch flicked in their head, and they all of a sudden became twice as good of writers, and they matured in their instruments. Like over the course of like a normal 10-year period, people would mature. I mean, if you've heard the LAP stuff to the Korn stuff, it's like night and day of the musicianship, you know, and the riffs. So yeah. I'm not really sure how that happened, but it was like a matter of a year from LAPD, or maybe 2 years from LAPD to Korn. And it's just like something switched, and they just started writing all these great riffs. And, you know, it pretty quick we knew we were on something kind of special. And it eventually led us to a record deal, and then, you know, the rest is history.
You know, kind of getting into bringing this up to breaking in a sequence, David, for you, how does it feel at this point in life, you know, starting a band? You know, I know you guys have been together for a couple of years now, but actually getting out there and getting a band back together, because I mean, I'm in my early 40s, and thinking about starting a band right now, I'm almost makes me want to like puke in my mouth. So.
aside from this COVID thing, which makes playing any live shows totally impossible. But I mean, even before that, it's a completely different game these days. You know, when we first started with Korn, it was all about playing live shows. So we were playing clubs from San Diego to the Valley, almost like twice a month, we probably play a show. And then all of a sudden the internet took over, and it seemed like shows weren't so important anymore. It was all about social media, which is kind of disheartening, but I mean, I guess, you know, times change with everything going on with tech and all that. So I guess we just have to adjust to it. But it changed from live shows to tech and social media. And that's really the biggest kind of challenge, is try to adapt to it and change.
What about you, Rich? How are you thinking about the band and, you know, getting to play with David and, you know, just the great songs you guys have been putting out?
Well, I mean, you're a musician, right? So I think that true musicians, once a musician, always a musician, right? I'm sure you get that itch. And if you're a true musician, you know what I'm talking about, that itch to play, right? So I was having that itch to play even before I joined this band. And I was just, you know, singing over Craigslist bands or whatever. But I get to do what 8% of the population doesn't get to do. I get to play with one of my heroes of yesteryear. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm definitely going to do that. And, you know, if we have like a great connection in the band and great friendship and everything. So I think it's awesome.
Absolutely.
Got a fan question here from Christopher Salvador. What was your favorite experience playing in Korn? Pretty blanket statement there, but.
Blanket answer then. My favorite experience was the live shows, the tours. Yeah. All the tours were great. It was amazing. I got to live my childhood dream for real. I mean, that's only because of the support of Korn fans that we got it out of my garage and got onto the big stages and played arenas and stuff all over the entire world. So, you know, if it weren't for the fans, we've just been a garage band for, you know, a bunch of kids playing music. But the fans caught on. They liked it. They put us on the big stage. And basically my childhood dream came a reality. And I'm forever thankful for that.
Yeah. As Richard knows, we just bought a house and we're packing. And so I was packing some stuff the other day, and I came across my Ozzy Korn Life of Agony flyer from the first time I saw you guys. And, you know, what are your memories of that tour? Because that was, I went for you guys, but I know everyone else was there for Ozzy. So I'm sure seeing Korn for the first time in front of an Ozzy crowd was pretty rough.
You know what? Surprisingly, that's what we thought too. Let me back up here. The reason we got the Ozzy tour was because Korn's record deal was through a subsidiary of Epic Records called Immortal. and Ozzy was signed to Epic Records. So the first time we got on the Ozzy tour, it was a connection within Epic Records that put us on it. And the first tour, I mean, that was our first arena tour ever. So we had to just been playing clubs, big clubs with 311 before that. And then we went right to arenas with Ozzy. I don't ever remember anybody booing, honestly. But I mean, since then, I think we've done four national tours with Ozzy. I mean, we toured with Ozzy more than anybody. No, maybe Metallica as much. Probably about the same as Metallica. But I know we did like four national tours with Ozzy. And every tour, I remember I was surprised because the demographic and the crowd, you know, obviously I kind of thought, I don't know how they're going to feel about us, but surprisingly they liked us every time. Much better than I expected.
Rich, got a question for you from John Beatty, the host of the Brutally Speaking podcast. It says, what has David taught you and the rest of the band as far as navigating the music industry that's been a surprise for you?
Man, I don't know.
Rich knows it all. I didn't teach him anything.
I don't know nothing.
Smartest guys I know.
Thanks, dude. I don't really know. I just know that I hate the music industry. Like the business part of it itself, I hate it with a passion. All I want to do is play music and write cool tunes. Like the business side can just fuck off for a while. I don't know.
It does suck these days, yes.
And then there's kind of a follow-up flip side of that. You know, how is it being a mentor to these guys? David, you know, what's it like kind of being around a group of hungry dudes that want to do it, you know?
I don't feel like a mentor at all because everyone knows their craft. I just feel like it's friends getting together and jamming and playing. So to me, we're all on a level playing field. I don't think I'm above anybody from my past career. I respect everyone equally. And I think it's just, I feel like just friends getting together and making music. It's great.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's how we all feel too. It's just a whole bunch of good friends getting together. And I think that comes out in the music, you know, like we had to build that bond and that connection in order to grow as a band. And, you know, Josh, you know, just being in multiple bands, you have to form that connection and it takes some time to form that connection.
Yeah, that's probably the hardest part, you know, because you get four or five dudes in a room and four dudes on the same page, and then you got one rhythm guitar player that's, you know, having issues at home or something, and you're just, it's a pain in the, you know, pain trying to get everybody together. Trying to get five people going in the same direction for anything has got to be, is rough.
Yeah.
It can be, but we've been pretty lucky so far.
Yeah, and as I said, everything that comes out is better than the thing before. So that's definitely a positive direction kind of in the band.
And we have seven more songs tracked, recorded, and mixed, ready to go. Yep. Besides Delusional, seven more.
What's the plan with that? Are you going to do an album? Or are you going to kind of stagger them out, like do singles one at a time?
Stagger out singles one at a time.
Yeah.
Yes.
You feel that's a new way of doing it?
Every 24 hours.
No.
Joking.
Sean A. Mayer calling you the God of Skins, David.
God of Skins. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it.
I think the single approach is the way to go in this industry, you know, because the attention span out there is very limited compared to what it used to be. Like if you find an old school guy like us, we all want to hear albums, right? But, you know, all the new listeners are so used to just skipping around genres, skipping around artists and stuff like that. I don't think that if we released an album, it would get the listening or the attention that it would get if we released them individually.
Yeah, we're lucky if we get 4 minutes of their attention. It was like, I got to check my Instagram. I got to check my Facebook. I got to, you know, they're all flying all over the place online and shit. So if we get their attention for 4 minutes, we're good.
Yeah.
Scott, friend of the show, Scott Stein says, I took Freakin' a Leash back to the record store on release day because I thought I bought a blank CD, not knowing track one was really track 13. Thanks, Dave.
Follow the leader, right? Isn't that follow the leader?
That actually wasn't me. I didn't have anything to do with that.
But wasn't there a sticker on the CD? Thought there was a sticker on the CD that says starts on track 13.
We initially did our first press of CDs and albums to put out, and then we had so many people complaining back to the record stores that we did put a sticker on the second release.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had to do that.
That's too funny. Man.
People thought they're buying defective shit.
It's so funny, just like going back and you know, getting ready for this. Obviously, I kind of went down the rabbit hole. I mean, you know, Korn came out, you know, in my, I was 15, and Korn was my band. Like, that was end all be all band at the time. I mean, it was, and I've had Head on the show before, and I kind of told him the same thing of, it was a culmination of everything that I was listening to at the time, you know, Biohazard, Helmet, Faith No More, Judgment Night soundtrack. Like, it just kind of all came together in one band. And, you know, I was thinking with this band, you know, David, you need to call some favors in, because there are tons of bands that are still out there right now that owe you a career.
I don't think about it like that. They don't owe me anything.
I'm just saying, you guys changed the game for a lot of people.
I mean, I honestly can't tell you how many people have told me that we've created this new genre of metal, new rock. New metal. And I don't really know how to take it. I do agree that we changed the music scene and put the course of heavy music on a different route. But I mean, I just feel like me. I don't feel like, oh, I did something. I changed the whole entire scene. Or it's not a feeling that I have. It's just, I guess, I've heard it so many times. I don't really understand it. But I mean, I guess we did, for all, you know, intents and purposes. I guess we did kind of change the scene and created this new genre called nu metal.
Yeah, I can tell you that you converted me from a Pantera, Metallica, Slayer guy into a Korn guy when I was 15, 16.
Right there with you. We got a hello from Brazil, from Andre. Good day, Richard. Good day, David, from Andrew. I'm assuming maybe in Australia. That seems Australia.
Hi, Andrew.
Hello, everybody.
And then got Dave Wathen here. He says, seen David with Korn at the brewery here in Louisville back in 97. Helmet and Limp Bizkit, great show. I believe I was at that show too. That was pre-Limp Bizkit, I think, even having a record out.
Yeah, you know, we found them in Jacksonville, basically discovered them in Jacksonville, because we were doing a show there and a local promoter got them to open for us. We hadn't even heard of them before. We just said, okay. And we saw them play once and we were like, you guys are really great. We took them on tour with us almost immediately. And I think it was during our first tour that they got their record deal. I think, I'm not sure, but if my memory serves me right. Yes.
Yeah, that was a great tour, just because, you know, Korn, Helmet, and Limp Bizkit, you know, because at the time, you know, I think I was at the show in Louisville, and the Louisville show, and I think the Aftertaste by Helmet came out the next day, so they did a record signing that night.
I still after love the show.
Oh, dude, what a great band!
I love Helmet. Yeah,
same.
Yeah. John Stainer, an amazing drummer that doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, he's good. He's got some great chops for sure.
Yeah, and then the you know, you've got some stuff out. It looks like you guys did a show in March at the Whiskey that you know, obviously came across really great too. What are the, you know, are you guys able to? I know the Whiskey. I think it's the Whiskey that's doing some live shows, no crowd, just kind of doing some fundraiser type stuff. You know, are you guys looking at doing any kind of live stream shows or anything like that?
We have someone looking into the show at the Ventura Movie Theater. I don't even know what it's called. But other than that, we haven't really explored the possibilities of playing at the Whiskey or anywhere else. I mean, maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe we should. You know, that show at the Whiskey was the last show at the Whiskey, period.
Oh, wow.
Like 2 days later, everybody had COVID. Everybody.
Everyone. Yep. The world ended. We're in purgatory right now.
Yeah. Everybody got sick the next morning.
The next day they shut down everything for COVID. So we were the last show there. And that was supposed to be a showcase for us. So,
Luis here, big fan of the show. I will never forget watching David warm up on the drums in the Who Then Now VHS at the Indigo Ranch. Love his drumming. Tell us a little bit about the Indigo Ranch, man. That's a place of epic proportions there.
Yeah, Indigo Ranch is where we recorded our first two records. It was owned by a guy named Richard Kaplan. And, to get there, it was way up in the hills in Malibu. I mean, it even went to, the roads weren't even paved. At some point, you have to get off the paved road, and you're driving on this one-way dirt driveway or dirt road up the hill, and there's those little carve outs. So if a car is coming the opposite direction, one of you has to pull out and let the other car come through. And this is like a steep mountain, I mean, going up. So it's kind of scary driving. And you see another car, and you're like, oh my God, we got to find a pull out just to let a car through. So we get up there, and then he has like this full bunkhouse and this amazing recording studio, you know, 2-inch reels. So we basically stayed there for like 6 weeks. And I think we would go down the hill and go to like a, I think they had like a Whole Foods or some kind of market down there in Malibu. We'd go down the hills like once a week and buy a ton of groceries and a shitload of alcohol and take it up to the ranch, they called it. And as far as I know, I think Richard, he literally fought off 2 different wildfires in the hills in Malibu where the studio was, where at one point he was on the roof of the studio with the hose. And yeah. I think one of his workers was on the bunkhouse roof with another hose, and they were able to fight off 2 fires throughout the years, at least 2 fires, maybe more, but 2 that I know of. And then eventually, this has been 4 or 5, maybe more years ago, he closed it down. I don't really know exactly why, other than everybody's recording on a computer these days in their freaking bedroom. But
hey, David, I heard it burned down.
I was gonna say, I think it actually finally burned down. Yeah, I think he lost it all.
He defended that place quite a few times. I know that. I mean, it was definitely in a burn zone. Remember I was telling you about the dirt road to get to it? It was all dry brush around it, completely dry.
Dang.
That's a mess. So, Rich, kind of being around David, I don't know if you're like me. I did an album with Fred Corey from Cinderella years ago. And when we were in the studio, like in between takes, I'm just like, Fred, tell me about David Lee Roth. And Fred, tell me about Bon Jovi. You know, do you get like that with David, or are you kind of like just leave David alone when it comes to that stuff?
I just leave him alone. I don't do that shit, do I?
No, he does. Nobody does.
But let me tell you something. When I auditioned for these guys, let me tell you what they did. They put my mic stand right in front of David's drums. Nice. So when I was singing for the first time in a room with these guys, I had to sing in front of David. Yeah. And that was kind of like, whoa, what the – you know, that was really jarring for me. But after I got to know him, you know, it was cool after that.
We were putting you in singer position.
Yeah, singer position. Yeah, like facing you.
Lewis said, "I made it my goal to drink Coors Light because of Korn and the Who Then Now VHS." Yeah, they definitely should have given you guys some sort of sponsorship back then if they didn't.
Hey, check this out. We recorded "Follow the Leader." We rented this house up in We recorded "Untouchables." We rented this house up in the Hollywood Hills, and it was on a steep kind of hill. So
hey, that
when
was
you
Fall the
it,
Leader,
when you,
David,
was that Fall the Leader?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so many records, you know. So anyways, so the house is up on this hill. So you walk in, and it's right into the living room kitchen, and you walk out, and there's a patio overlooking a backyard that's fenced in. And throughout the entire recording of the record, everyone took their beer cans and threw them, or bottles, whatever they're drinking, and threw them over the balcony into the backyard that was fenced in. And by the time we were done recording, ready to move out of the house, there was like 1.5 feet deep of the entire backyard filled with bottles and cans. It was pretty crazy. I think we spent $30,000 on booze during the recording of that record. It was ridiculous.
You know, it's funny, as I spent some time, obviously being a kid, 15, a friend of mine, we would go see Korn. I saw Korn, I saw you guys on the first album probably 4 or 5 times in the Midwest. And we drove to Knoxville the night after the Ozzy show. And it was like you guys and GZR and Life of Agony may have played that show. But it snowed really, really bad. And like Head and Monkey were all outside just like playing in the snow, like they'd never seen it before. It was pretty insane, man. Seeing the expressions on everyone's face, kind of just being in, you know, 6 feet of snow.
Yeah, you know what? I've got like 8 coats in my closet that since I've stayed home here in California, I've never worn since I've been on tour. It's literally, it takes up like 4 feet of one of my closets, all these big ass jackets that I specifically bought. The only place I could ever wear them was like the Midwest and the East Coast for during the winter. Yeah, it's probably the first time that those guys have ever seen really thick snow.
I think that's what they were saying that night. Yeah, so it was pretty nuts, man. Kind of seeing everybody experience snow for the first time. Dave Watson says Indigo Ranch had a raw signature drum sound, in my opinion. Took the first 2 Korn records, first Slipknot record, raw, unpolished sound to me. When you were recording with Ross Robinson, did he ever throw a flower pot at you or anything?
No, he never threw anything at me. I mean, he would come in the studio where I was tracking drums, and you could hear him on some of the songs. You could hear him yelling, because he's like yelling, giving me cues, and just like, you know, reminding me to do stuff coming up. But you can hear him yelling on some of their songs. Ross was amazing.
Ross was great.
Yeah, he's an amazing producer. Great, really good friend, an amazing guy.
One of my favorite lines ever said on the show was I asked Max Cavalera that, and he said, yeah, but we were the first band to throw the flower pot back.
I don't think Ross ever threw anything at us.
Well, he definitely got some emotions out of you guys. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he did. Absolutely.
This is Peter from Metal Sucks podcast. He said he got to be in the Corn Cage during Family Values, and all I did was watch David killed it from above. Great memory.
Yeah, the Corn Cage was amazing. It was so fucking cool. And one thing I really liked about it, it was my idea to do it, but we took speakers, big like PA speakers, and we've put like four speakers, because you know it's two levels. So we put like four speakers at each level, and we cranked that the mix that was out in the house, because when we first designed the cage, the first thing I thought was if the people are in the cage, they're only going to hear what they hear from the stage. It's not going to sound good. So I had our sound guy put four speakers in each level of it and cranked the house sound back to them. Just because I didn't want them to hear what the stage sound, you know what I mean? I wanted them to hear everything.
Just from a pure kind of fan question, I guess. I mean, what is it like as, you know, someone being so young at the time, becoming Korn, you know, TRL and everything else that kind of came with it, man? Was it just a whirlwind?
It was a childhood dream come true, literally. Since I was 10 years old, I played drums, and all I wanted to do was be a drummer. So when we got signed and we got tour support, you know, proper tour support, and it got on real tours and had people working with us and setting up my drums, I didn't have to mess with all that stuff. It was literally my childhood dream coming to true. And I mean, I've been fortunate enough, you know, as Richard said, 99 point whatever people in the world don't ever get to do it, but I got to do it. It became my reality. I will forever be grateful to all the fans who made it possible. Forever. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact earlier, you're like, I don't know if we toured more with Ozzy or Metallica. You're like, that's a pretty rough thing to have.
First world problems right there.
Rob Ruscha from Zero, if you remember that band. Wow, that's crazy. The front of house engineer must have really been good to be able to pipe the house sound behind the band.
It was just another feed from the house system. It wasn't a big deal. He just put four speakers for eight feeds from the house. That's no big deal.
Yeah,
it doesn't require any extra mixing.
I love the Zero, by the way.
Yeah, great band. Can we show off the records, David?
You want to see the records? All right, I'll take you guys change over there.
Let's
go over to the records. Hold on here. Oh, let me get a little drink of water.
As you walk in, Cal Hines asking you, who were David's musical / drum influences / idols?
Easily. Mike Bourne, Faith No More, Kim Alexander, Primus.
Nice. So obviously, Mike Bourne filling in for you while you were sitting there next to him had been amazing. Him watching him play your songs, you know.
I mean, it was amazing, but at the same time, I was sad because I knew I had a medical issue I had to go take care of, so he had to fill in with me. So it was kind of sweet but sour.
Nice.
So you want to see this record here?
Yeah, this is pretty intense, guys, if you're watching on the video here.
Can you see that corn right there?
Yep.
Tell me when the record ends. See the whole thing?
Yeah, there we go. That's it. Wow, even the Family Values Tour, like, soundtrack went platinum?
Absolutely.
Jesus.
There we go.
I don't think you had that up when I was over at your house last.
No, you know what? This thing has literally been in a box for 10 years. That's what I'm saying. It says 32 million, and now it's 50 million. This thing was made like 12 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have individual ones too, or you just had the one made?
I think I have individual ones.
Yeah. You got a couple more rolling in here. JR Official says, David, you probably hear this a lot, but you are my inspiration to become a drummer. Your grooves are always unique and innovative.
I appreciate that. That's kind of what we were talking about, the David sound that I just think is just how I play. I don't really think about it in terms of a certain sound. It's just what comes natural. Probably because, as I was saying, my influences were Mike Borden and Tim Alexander. Mike Borden for more of the tom beats and Tim Alexander for the grooves.
Well, Rich, man, I don't want to leave you out of this, man. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it was great. Like, even when Mike Borden was playing for Ozzy there for a little bit, I mean, it just made that much heavier, you know, seeing him play those grooves too.
Yeah. Yeah. Our second tour with Ozzy, Mike was playing drums. Our second, maybe third.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's where we met Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he had a monster band at that point. I think, was that Rob Trujillo and Zach Wilde too?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I think the first time you toured with him would have been like, I think Geezer was playing bass for him.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Rich, what vocal inspiration for you, Rich? I want to leave you out.
Vocal inspiration? You know, I have so many, but Scott Weiland is up there in my top, Lane Stanley. I could say Phil Anselmo, he's like one of my favorite singers. He's got the best voice ever. Like, if I could scream like him, I'd be happy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think everybody'd be happy with that. David, were you a Vinnie Paul guy?
What's that?
What were you a Vinnie Paul guy?
I liked his playing. Yeah, absolutely. He we're totally different styles, but he was great. Absolutely. He was really good.
No. Any stories of, those guys showing up at shows? Any Dimebag stories?
Was it Vinny or Dimer? Both of them owned the strip club in Texas.
Just Vinny.
Well, we've been to the strip club with all of them, and we ended up back at one of their houses after a show.
Nice.
I probably shouldn't go into any details, but yeah, we were... Yeah, nice. We had a great time. They're really nice. They were really nice guys to us. They're super cool. For some reason, whenever Vinny walked up to somebody, it's like he threw his arm around somebody, and it's like he leaned his entire weight on you. So you're like, oh, it's a guy, get off of me. Big sweaty guy.
Yeah. Yeah, of the 90s, man, it was my bands were Pantera and Korn, definitely. I think Rich can agree with that.
Yeah.
The breaking in a sequence. I don't know. I keep wanting to call it breaking in a silence, but breaking in a sequence. What are the kind of, obviously you have the singles kind of rolling out. We're talking about some live shows. Are you looking at 2021 before you can really get rolling, or what are we looking at?
I mean, I think we're just looking at it as whenever this COVID thing, they come up with a vaccine or a cure, whenever the economy opens up. I mean, I think we're pretty much stuck until then. I mean, unless we do like those drive-in shows I was talking about in Ventura, Oxnard. Ventura, yeah. Like
yeah. I mean, I think right now we have a pretty good plan. We have an actual roadmap of what we're going to release and when, you know, while everything is just kind of shut down and in limbo. So we'll continue on that path, you know, with just releasing stuff and we're trying to get together as much as possible to write new material, you know? So let's say right when things open, let's say mid 2021, we can hit the ground running, you know, we could hit the studio again and track a new record and release it or an EP or whatever, you know?
We will be
ready. Is this something you guys want to start touring, like extensive touring, or where are we at with that?
It all depends. I mean, first of all, we have to secure a record label secure a record deal with a label and management and all that stuff. And then hopefully what they can offer us is, an opening slot on the bigger tour.
Right.
You know, go right to either theaters or, I mean, it would be great if we could get on an arena tour, but I mean, theaters would be great with me.
Right. That's what I'm saying, man. You got to open up that phone and call some, hey. You remember that? Remember when you copied all my drum style? now you owe me.
Can you make the calls for him?
No. Hey, I might have, give me your Rolodex, David. I'll make the phone calls. Go ahead.
I've never even thought about doing that, but it sounds good.
Well, I'll nudge you to do it. AH over here on YouTube says, David, if you could relive your top three shows throughout your career, what would they be?
Top three shows?
Yeah.
Let's see. Probably Woodstock 99, Rock 'Em Ring Germany, and I don't remember a specific show, but I mean, we toured with Metallica when they're playing in the round.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool.
How did you like playing in the round?
I loved it. I thought it was absolutely great.
Were you on any kind of rotating kit, or did you just have to play with your back to people, you know, for most of the show?
Just played with my back to the back of the audience. We didn't have a rotating budget back then.
Come on, man.
You should have just played Lars's kit. Or Hetfield's kit that he uses to drum battle Lars.
There you go.
I doubt they would have allowed me to do that.
Let's see. Got another hi for David. Got a hope to see you guys in 2021.
We hope to be there too.
Another hello to David. People loving the David. Hello. And then, you know, as... Are you guys going to continue to do more videos? I saw you did a video with Matt Zane, who is a guy that I've actually toured with in the past. So, you know, how was working with Matt Zane?
Dude, Matt's awesome.
Matt he's great.
Is like as professional as they come. Like he was on set just yelling orders at us and just getting it done, man. And I was super, super impressed with how his work ethic was on set. And afterwards, he had us, I think, a rough edit in like some crazy amount of time. I want to say like a day or two.
And he did it. He did it with probably half or less than half of the crew you shoot a normal video with. He was amazing. I mean, we're definitely going to go back with Matt Zane when we do a video.
Yeah. He was like a one man crew. He's awesome, dude. And I don't know if you've been following his other band, his band's Society One, but dude, he just puts content out after content after content. He's got new songs coming out all the time.
Yeah, they're on it for sure.
Yeah, Matt, Society One opened for us back in like 2002 on a tour. So.
Oh, wow.
Let's see here. All right, nerd drum question for David. How did David end up with the Pearl Decade drum kit versus a higher-end kit and then the switch to the 2002 Pisces versus the Signatures and Rudes in the past? So that's super deep nerd stuff.
Okay, the drums... I was playing Star Classics from Tommy, which is they're all maple shells. So I just really wanted to try a Pearl kit. So I got the Decade Maple, which is kind of comparable to the Tommy Star Classic. So that's the reason I got that. It was mainly because I wanted to switch to hardware. I wanted to use the Pearl rack, but the Tommy hardware didn't fit so good in it. So I just go, okay, let me just try the Pearl drums. Why not? I'll try it. But the cymbals, I started out with the Rude. I think he said that, right? So I started out with the Rude cymbals, and I was breaking them quite a bit. So finally, after years of breaking them, I asked Kelly Peisty about another cymbal that I wouldn't break as much. And she said, the reason you're breaking Rudes is because they're so thick and they don't have any give. So they just instantly break. Because I was thinking, why am I breaking so many cymbals? So then I went to a bit thinner cymbal, the... Signature series, but that's still a pretty thick cymbal. So then I went to her, I said, what's thinner than a Signature series but still sounds good? She said, you're going to love the 2002s. They're flexible, they have a lot of ring to it, and they sound really high end. So now I'm playing 2002s, and I'm thinking, why did I waste all those years playing Peisty Rudes? The 2002s, they're crisper. Again, the flexibility is a good thing. It's great to not break a cymbal every 3 or 4 days.
Nice. See, Rich, that's what I was talking about before the show. Some of these questions, that was something I would never ask, but we get a really good answer.
No, I imagine people would ask that. And you should cover how you went to the Pearl rack because it's square and not round, so it wasn't rotating on you.
Yes, that's why I went to the Pearl. I tried to go just to the Pearl rack and use all my Thomas stuff, and it was kind of compatible, but not really great. So just to see, because I haven't played any other drums, I wanted to try the Pearl hardware with the toms and all that. So I just ordered the Decade Maple kit from Pearl, just basically because it's an all maple shell, like the Star Classic.
Do you still have the? Oh, hang on. Sorry, I missed one. Do you still have the Tequila Sunrise drum kit?
I do. Packed away.
It's probably next to that where that platinum record plaque was, right?
Underground.
To both you guys from right here, to David and Rich, both, which Breaking in a Sequence song is your favorite to play live?
What's yours, David?
In honestly, I think maybe Delusional.
I would say Delusional, between Delusional and Surprise for me, or Twine. So
yeah, Twine's great. It changes all the time. I could have a favorite one week, and the next week have another favorite.
Yeah. So you guys will hear the new Breaking in a Sequence songs. They're all kind of like a different genre, each one of them. But they're not so far off that it's a completely different genre, but they just all have a different feel to them.
Yep.
I was watching some, kind of going back, watching some David stuff. And one thing I noticed was back in the 90s, early 2000s, pre-camera phones, man, how just amazing it was to look out and see people actually getting into the music and not trying to be amateur cinematographers. You know, how amazing that must have felt.
Talking about the jumping crowds?
Yeah, just looking out and seeing everybody not have their phones in their hands and actually just enjoying the music.
We're fortunate enough to write groove music, which enticed jumping. Yeah. So, yeah, the jumping was definitely amazing to watch. Great feel. Crowd participation is always fun.
What is the longest you think you've ever did the ride cymbal for Blind before the song kicked in?
It probably seemed longer, but it was probably only about 2 minutes.
Yeah. I figured there's...
Yeah.
There's got to be a show out there where you're just like, if they don't start this song, I swear to God, I'm going to start throwing stuff at everybody.
Yeah. I think it was Philly just messing with me because he starts out with the bass line and nothing else happens until he does his bass tag. I think, I can't remember where we're at, but I think one time he just let me go and go and go. And I was looking at him going, come on, let's get this song going, man. I think he was just messing with me.
See, well, guys, I definitely appreciate
that. Was a crazy question, Josh.
Hey, you know, it's actually funny. As I actually asked Joey Jordison that one time, kind of just seeing how long they would make him do it, kind of just filling in for you.
How long do you say?
I think you said the same thing. You said, you know, it's not that bad. You know, you just kind of. I think the little the bell kind of breaks it up, so it's not just killing your arm the whole time.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know. Just doing anything repetitive like that, I'm sure it would finally, you know, your arm would fall off eventually.
Hey, David, we should try that in our next practice, like 5 minutes. I'll time it. We'll go live. Live on Facebook.
Yeah, more,
just play the bell.
There you go. More content.
The bell. 5 minute bell.
Now, are you guys playing Korn songs live? Are you going to do anything like that? Or are you guys strictly going to do just Breaking into Sequence stuff?
Breaking the Sequence.
Yeah, we're not going to.
Can't cover my old band.
Well, it's not necessarily cover now, is it?
Well, for the band,
the other
it would
four
be
of us, it is.
But you have an innovator back there on the drums behind you, so I think you're allowed to do that if you want to.
I guess
maybe late in the career.
Well, and then Yeah. Well, if you guys get thrown out on like a tour and you have to fill out a set, you'd be like, damn it, I guess we're going to have to do, we'll have to throw Blind into the set, or you just do some deep cuts that Korn doesn't play. You
know? I guess it's a possibility. You never know what happened.
But, you know, it's one of the. There we go. Well, as we kind of wrap this up, you know, I mean, we've talked about kind of the future of the band. You know, I mean, what are your grand, desires for the band, David?
Grand desires to become a worldwide touring band and get hopefully there's a regular record deal out there. I don't know about these 360 deals that are presented to everyone, but I mean, the times have changed. But anyways, grand scheme of things, we want to be a worldwide touring band.
Rich?
Yeah, I think, be a touring band that's successful enough so that the rest of us don't have to work day jobs.
Absolutely, man. I can go along and be your podcasting roadie guy.
Yeah, you can be the nudger that gets David to go to the Rolodex.
Hey, I want to show you guys the surfboard.
All right, let's do the surfboard.
Check out the surfboard. It's sideways, but it was presented from Sony Music in Australia. I'll start at the top. You see that?
All right, yep.
See the CDs on there?
Oh, nice.
See the cap?
That's the tattoo I have. Tattoo, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole thing there.
So how much grief did you get, David, for being for the Calvin Klein stuff?
I didn't really get any grief. I mean, what are people to say? I mean, it was when the first the fad became of jeans being ripped up and torn, right?
Yeah.
So Calvin Klein started making pre-ripped jeans you can buy. They call them dirty denim. That's what the ad was for. It was just for the style back then was all ripped, faded jeans and shit. So they started making them. So that was what the ad was for, the dirty denim campaign. As far as I remember, I don't think anybody at all gave me shit. In fact, when we made the Twisted Transistor, video, we had everyone playing like Little John and David Banner, Snoop Dogg was in the video. And David, these are rappers, of course. David Banner played me, and I think one of the scenes was someone was supposed to be looking at a magazine, yelling at him, going, "Man, why you do this ad?" And he gets mad, he takes the magazine and rips it. It was pretty funny.
I love that the ladies in the chat room are now coming in talking about how much they love those pictures of David. That's too good. It's definitely a fun period for everybody.
Yep.
There's another one. Was it true that Puma paid you guys like $500,000 to go from Adidas to Puma?
Nope, absolutely not.
It was more, right?
Okay.
That's not true. They did not. They did not pay us to go from Adidas to Puma.
All right. There was a switch there, and I always heard there was some money behind it. So maybe they just didn't tell you. It's like that meme of everybody gets some, then it gets to David, and he's like, "What?"
I haven't seen that one. That's funny.
It's I guess we'll just end on, so what's something you want to say to the fans, David?
Keep an eye out for us. We're coming out as soon as this COVID thing's over. We're going to be hopefully playing some shows and hopefully getting on a tour, because at that point, I think everybody's going to be ready to go on tour. So I can't see us not going on some kind of tour, getting on a tour after this COVID thing's over. I'm sure it's going to be so busy. It's going to be shit's going to be booked for a couple of years in advance as soon as this thing's over. But just tell people to look for our music on all the digital platforms and stick with us. We're going to keep releasing new music, and hopefully we'll get to a town with them soon.
Rich, yeah, same.
Now easier to find.
Yes.
Yeah, much easier to find.
Yeah, no interpunk.
Well, too often. Right. Well, too cool, guys, man. Thanks for taking the time tonight, and it's been a lot of fun catching up, and we'll have to do this again.
Thank you for having us, Josh. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And make sure to rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we will talk to you soon.
Hey, guys.
All right, huge thank you to David and Richard for taking the time. That was a lot of fun. Obviously, grew up a gigantic Korn fan,
and really enjoying what he is doing over there in Breaking in a Sequence. Make sure you are supporting them when he opens up that Rolodex and he comes through your town. And now we go to the Great White North. We got to go into Canada. I don't think that Americans are allowed into Canada right now, but we snuck in and we got a great interview with Brittany Slays of Unleash the Archers. So let's check it out. What is up, everybody? Welcome into the show. We've got a great show this week with Brittany Slays of Unleash the Archers. Brittany, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well, doing well. Finally getting a chance to talk to you once again about this great new album. It's funny, I've got to now live with the album for a couple of weeks now, and man, I have to say Abyss is a pretty great album.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Go ahead and start off by telling us a little bit about Abyss. I know it's a kind of a sequel to the last album, so just kind of take us on the journey of Unleash the Archers Abyss.
Sure. Yeah, it is a sequel to Apex. So in Apex, we were introduced to our main characters, our tragic hero, the Immortal, and our villainous sorceress, the Matriarch. And basically, the Immortal is cursed to serve whoever awakens him from his thousand-year slumbers. And in Apex, he is awakened by the Matriarch. She gets him to do some horrible, evil things for her, and then betrays him at the end of the story by, instead of setting him free, as she had promised, sending him back to sleep to wait for when she would have need of him again. So fast forward about 50 years in Abyss, the Immortal awakens by himself on a starship out in space. The Matriarch is nowhere to be seen, and he decides that this is now the time, and he's going to take his revenge out on her and rid the universe of her evil for once and for all.
And now with something this, I guess, graphic novel-ish, you know, is this something that you have to take a long time to write? Is this something that's always going on in your head? You know, how long does it take you to get to a point where you're writing a sequel to something so massive?
Well, so we wrote it all actually back in 2016 when we first started writing for Apex. And initially we were thinking that we'd release it as a two-disc record, so Apex and Abyss as one release. But then we decided that, you know, we just weren't going to be able to spend as much time on each track as we wanted to. So we put Abyss aside, put that side of the story away for a little while and all the riffs that we had started for it, and then just focused solely on Apex. And then the story changed kind of a bit during the writing process for Apex. And then again, after, you know, we got all the feedback and reviews and everything on Apex and just the parts that our fans really enjoyed, that kind of thing, that then changed the story a little bit more for Abyss again. And I mean, for the most part, the foundation was always there. The whole, you know, the fact that Apex takes place in a terrestrial realm and Abyss is, you know, out in space. That was always the plan. So little things here and there changed. So yeah, just kind of as the music progressed, the story progressed.
When it comes to writing songs and you're telling stories, is there a certain time where you go to the band and you're like, hey, I need another 8 bars here to kind of complete the story? Or do you work around what they give you, or how does that work?
Well, I mean, there were points where I was kind of like, can this one be a little bit longer? You know, I need to tell quite the story here. And yeah, they would just kind of write around that. There was a point where when we were writing Legacy, and Andrew came to me basically with the first, you know, that first kind of 3 sections of it, of what the song is. And he's like, okay, this is what I got. And I don't know where to go from here. And I was just like, well, let's just kind of do that again. It's a really cool part. It's really easy for me to sing to. It was like melodies just started coming right away. So I was kind of like, you know, I think I can really use this to tell quite a bit of the story in a different way. So there's no traditional chorus on that song, for instance. And we left it that way just because the whole thing is basically like prose, I guess you could say. It's a little bit of a an odyssey sort of, just telling one story all throughout. And so Andrew was just kind of like, yeah, no, that works. And he worked around it and made it so that I would had no repeating parts. It was all just telling one one long story all through the whole thing. So in times like that, yeah, we definitely worked around each other.
Now, I know that the, you know, with the album coming out, obviously the question to everybody now is, you know, what do you do with coronavirus? And I see you guys are doing a live stream on August 22nd. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll kind of move on with the question there.
Sure. So we're going to do, it's a pre-recorded set, so we didn't want to deal with Wi-Fi issues, which you and I are both very familiar with now. So we didn't want to take the risk that, you know, something could drop out halfway through the show or, you know, just any kind of technical issue could come up. So we're going to record it a couple days before and then post it for 24 hours. And it'll be a completely new, brand new set that we're recording just for this. And we're going to play a lot of the new stuff. So we're really, really excited for that. And a lot of old favorites as well. And then probably some songs that you won't get to hear live ever again, maybe. Who knows? But yeah, it's gonna be a good time. It's gonna be weird, you know. We're just gonna play it like a regular show, and imagine all of our fans are on the other side of all the cameras. So it's definitely gonna be weird, but we're excited.
Doing something like that, I mean, it gives you a little bit of a chance to do maybe a little bit more production. Are you gonna be able to kind of pull out some dragons and things like that, you know, for the show?
You know what's so funny is that Grant, like, actually just sent a link to this like smoke breathing dragon that they have available, like Canadian Tire. I was just like, no, what? We don't do dragons. There's no dragon in this story.
It's kind of funny. I was actually watching some live videos, and I guess you were on tour of Dragon Force.
Yes.
So they had a giant dragon in the background, and I was like, please let that be their dragon. But then I realized they were on tour of Dragon Force.
Yeah, no, it was definitely Dragon Force's dragon. But they used our fog for it, so they didn't have their fog machine. So we helped make it cool. Anyways, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're I guess we'll have like some lighting and all that sort of stuff. But honestly, I'm just not good at that side of things. I am not that person that deals with all that. When it comes to the stage, I am all about interacting with the audience and connecting with people. And I honestly, I could play with nothing. I could do an acoustic set by myself, probably in the middle of a town square, and it wouldn't really matter. I don't know. None of that stuff is like top of my list. So if the boys want smoke and dragons, they can do it, but I'm not in charge.
Well, it does seem to be kind of odd because I feel like in from my playing days too, the bigger the crowd, the easier it was to do. You know, once you got down to like 10, 15 people where you could see each individual face, that's when the nerves kind of hit and you felt watched. But for some reason, you'd play in front of 20,000 people and it's not as big a deal. So knowing that you're being filmed and it's going to be critiqued and everything else, I feel like that's a little bit more pressure than maybe even just the festival show.
Probably, yeah, because there's a lot going on during a live show, you know? There's like a mosh pit, and there's a guy jostling you, and there's some chick spilling her beer, and so you're not like constantly focused on it at all times, whereas with a live stream, like, what else are you doing, you know? Maybe you got a cat bugging you in your living room or something, but like, it's going to be, yeah, you got to be on your A game for sure.
And the other thing you guys are doing is you're doing a D&D tournament with five random people that pre-order the album. Are you a big D&D player? Is this something you're looking forward to? Or are you just kind of going along for the ride with this one?
I am really looking forward to it. I'm not a big D&D player, but that's only because I don't have time. If I could, I would do it. But I just don't. I have zero time. It's so frustrating. And so I would love to be able to, you know, dedicate a whole weekend or whatever, that kind of a thing to it. So it's really going to be kind of based on this adventure guide thingy that I'm writing for Abyss, for the record, which will be available later, of course, after we go through it with the contest winners. And so people can kind of do their own thing with it. And I just have a lot of D&D fans that come to me and say, I love your music and I listen to Apex while I play, and or, you know, I'm doing a campaign around your album. Like, can you give me some details? So I just thought it would be fun to do something special for all those D&Ders out there that also happen to be fans of Unleash the Archers.
Yeah, it seems like a fun thing. I mean, if I was a big D&D person and a big fan and able to do all that, I mean, it's something outside the box that you can do right now, because so many people are trying to do so many things. You know, you got Metallica announcing a drive-in theater tour or a showing or whatever, and mm-hmm. you know, and just trying to find different ways to connect with the fans through all this. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we do it right, I think that in the end, you know, maybe you can add a D&D tournament to the next tour. You know, you can, yeah. I think we're going to be able to find so much stuff to kind of put together that'll open the realm of possibility for touring bands to come.
Totally. Yeah. You got to kind of innovate these days, right? You got to come up with fun new things. So, you know, hopefully there'll be a lot of cool ideas out there for everyone to get involved and to stay close to the fans, because can't do it live anymore. So gotta come up with something else.
And the one thing I did like is, you know, we talked last time you and I talked that no one will ever see, you know, you've done a lot of fun things online on YouTube and things with the reaction videos.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people did reaction videos to you. So you did reaction videos to reaction videos.
Yeah.
So go ahead and react to that. You know, tell me how much fun that was.
That was awesome. And I do plan on doing more. I hope to have a couple different reaction options on there for your viewing pleasure. The YouTube was kind of something that I was doing when there was a bit of a lull in time there. I didn't have much going on. But of course, it's the exact opposite right now. So I haven't really had a lot of time to dive into it. But hopefully, maybe in the fall, I'll come up with some fun new ideas and maybe start posting some of the Twitch streams on there if they're not copyright claimed for music, which happens a lot because, you know, can't even post our own tunes on there. So, hopefully I'll get some more content up there, but the reactions are a lot of fun. It's really funny because the reaction community has supported us quite a bit, and we're really excited. We're just like super honored that people are out there happy to, hey, you should react to Unleashed Chargers next. And it's just, it's like super rad.
Yeah, the reaction video community is very odd. My ex-roommate was a gigantic fan of, you know, hip hop head, listens to heavy metal, you know, that all that type stuff. Yeah. Let's pull up the Soulbound video here and just kind of go through, kind of talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the process behind doing this. I know that this was made during, you know, COVID, so you've got to kind of be creative here. So let us know what went on here.
Yeah, it was difficult. We had to social distance as much as possible. And then in instances where we couldn't, we had to keep production to only six of us. So basically we were, aside from that one scene with the extra, we were like never in the same room as him. And all of our performance video shots were, I mean, there were points where we played together, but for the most part, most of the footage they used is just from when we were all separated. And yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was filmed over like more than a few days. So lots of different locations and organization going on and just trying to, you know, work around as much as we possibly could. And for the character driven parts, actually, Grant couldn't even be there because we had to travel for where the shooting location was. So you can see that guy in there. That's actually Andrew's brother, Cam, right there with having the headache. So he stepped in when Grant was unable to do that, because otherwise Grant would have had to quarantine away after he got home from his family, which would have been horrible. So, and leaving his wife alone with three kids during a pandemic is not cool. So, it was interesting, but it was a lot of fun.
I do believe he's showing all the signs of COVID-19. So, I mean, I do think it would be a good idea for him to quarantine after the video.
Yeah, absolutely.
how much fun is it for you to get to, you know, just kind of dress up and, you know, with the prosthetics and the makeup and the, you know, just everything going on here?
Oh, I love that part. This is, you know, this is the true me right here. It's all black sclera lenses and I don't know, death runes on my face. Yeah, no, that's really cool. It's like music videos are really important to us. We always put absolutely everything we can into them and try and make them unique and engaging and something worth, you know, coming back to again and again. So it takes a lot of time and effort. And by the end of the, you know, usually it's like, oh yeah, okay, good 8 hour shoot turns into 10, 12, 14 hours sometimes. So it can be really tiresome, but it's definitely worth it. And yeah, we had a lot of fun on this one. Those lenses though, man, they burn at the end. I think they said that they had like a max wear time of 4 hours. And I think we were in them for probably about 8. Oof. So it was just like by the end of it, Andrew's face at the end where he's just like, oh, it's not because he's angry that he's in the, got pulled in by the matriarch. It's because his eyeballs were literally on fire.
You know, the one thing I was, you know, looking into the band and things like that, obviously being from Canada, you know, when you think of Canada and female fronted, I know it's not a genre, but you know, the you know, a lot of rockin' ladies coming from Canada, you know, Cobra and the Lotus, Kitty, Alanis, Biff Naked, Sumo Psycho, Avril, you know, you got so many people coming from Canada. What do you think it is about Canada that makes, you know, the ladies, you know, rock up there?
I don't know. Segregation? No. I don't know. I think that the heavy scene up here is really, is, you know, very well supported. And yeah, I think just kind of a little bit of an alternative society in general. And I mean, that's not like, it's funny that you say that there's a lot of rockin' ladies that come out of Canada, because there's a lot of just women in metal in general that are kicking ass from all over the world. And it's, I think, I don't know, are we producing more proportionately to the rest of the world? Maybe, I don't really know. But I guess, you know, there's definitely something in the water. I know I loved heavy metal from a very young age. So it could be these, you know, horrible cold winters that force you to stay right inside and do nothing but listen to music all day.
What was some of the earliest stuff that you got into metal-wise?
Megadeth was like the first record. Perfect. Then Tool, White Zombie, Pantera, you know, the usual crowd. And then it wasn't until I was older that like I even discovered power metal. So Iron Maiden and Judas Priest and Queensryche and all that kind of stuff was quite a bit later. Yeah.
Now the tour with Dragon Force, was it able to complete or was it cut short?
Destroyed. the tour that never was. We were 6 days in, we had played 4 shows, and yeah, I mean, the promoters were not saying a word about any possibility of there being an issue whatsoever. So we were just kind of like, you know, humming along, not a big deal. And people were saying like, oh, are you worried about coronavirus? And it was like, what? No, that's over in Europe. No big deal. And then lo and behold, we woke up in Minneapolis and the venue was just like, what? No, you're not coming in here. Everything's closed. The whole country is closing. Like no venues, no shows. We were just like, oh, I guess we better get on a flight home. Like what? And yeah. And then after that, shows just dropped like flies. Domino effect, one after the other. So yeah, it's pretty crappy.
It's been a mess. It's been a mess. And it kind of puts a damper on releasing a new album. Like we said, Unleash the Archer's Abyss out August 21st, Napalm Records. But yeah, it's got to be a tough time to try to put something out. And but like I said earlier, it's also maybe an innovative time.
Yeah, I mean, you got to kind of come up with new things, hence why we're doing the D&D and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, the record was pushed back a little bit. Originally, it was supposed to come out in July, and then we pushed it back a month. And then we were talking about maybe pushing back further. But then I was kind of like, you know, personally, I'm excited for new music. I'm constantly on my Spotify, like, who released what? What's new? What's going on? And I'm a part of, you know, a few Facebook groups that are constantly like, okay, what's in your release radar today? Like, let's share. So we all get, you know, new music all the time. And so I was just kind of like, you know, let's just go with it and see what happens and hope for the best, because I really feel like people are hungry for new music right now. And this could be like an awesome time to release something. And, you know, it's difficult because you don't know what people are going to be able to do financially due to have so many people having lost their jobs. But at least, you know, you could get way more streams now than you would have before, perhaps, you know, who knows? Well, you know, we'll never be able to compare. If only we could step into, you know, an alternate universe where this didn't happen and see what it was like. but we can't. So we're just going to kind of do the best that we can with what we've got. And our fans have been amazing so far and super supportive. So I'm honestly really, you know, just not worried, taking it day by day.
Are you into the idea of doing a socially distanced concert? You know, there are shows going on right now that are at 25% capacity, half capacity, outdoors, things like that. Would you be open to that? Or is that something are you in the want to wait till the vaccine camp?
Yeah, we're kind of not really, I mean, I get it if people are really doing what they can to make it safe. I just don't feel like we're kind of in that place yet where people are, or everyone involved is going to take, you know, the situation responsibly. So we're just not planning on doing anything until 2021. And hopefully things will be either cleared up by then or, you know, protocols will be in place. So, yeah, unfortunately, we just don't really want to take the chance, especially like with Grant. He's got three kids. Like, even if he is immune to it, he brings it home, his children could die. So we're just not even going there, really. Yeah.
All right. So we've got the D&D. We've got the live stream. You know, what else are you guys thinking up? Do you have anything else working for the release of the new album?
We are working on a couple more music videos. We're actually filming one this week. So, like, crazy busy this week. So we'll put out a couple more, probably. Maybe two, three. I don't know. It depends how much time we have in the fall. Just keep making music videos, you know. Who knows if we're bored out of our minds. And probably Twitch. We're just going to try and stream on Twitch as much as possible, I think, is really the plan. Impromptu jam sessions or Q&As or just hanging out with some beers on a Friday, whatever comes to mind. Yeah.
I think that's one thing that's during this pandemic, you know, I've gotten this program and I know a lot of other podcasters have turned to going online. And I think it's definitely, you know, opened us up to new possibilities too. So now we can do, you know, live shows and live streaming shows and things like that. So once again, you know, there's good and the bad of all of this, having to stay home stuff.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think we're going to get a lot of rad albums out of this, I think.
Yeah, 2021 is going to be can you do an interview with this person and this person and that person?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's going to be some great stuff. Well, Brittany, thanks for taking the time today. And like we said, the new album, Abyss, out August 21st, Napalm Records. And just thanks for taking some time with me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we could make it work this time and I wasn't doing the robot Wi-Fi dance.
glitch out. All right. Thank you, Brittany.
Have a good one.
Huge thank you to Brittany Slays. Huge thank you to Richard Wynn. Huge thank you to David Silvera for taking the time this week. It's been a lot of fun. Make sure you're checking out the video versions over on YouTube, over on the Facebook page. Hitting a like, share, let your friends know. Make sure you subscribe to that Talk To Me YouTube page. Let's get those numbers up. Let's get some subscribers over there, some comments rolling in, and that will be much appreciated. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys soon.